and throat. So I hope that you are also being good. Life has been treating you good. If I look at the smiles on the faces, it says yes. And if I look at the smiles on the faces, specifically from Sophia and what is in front of us, it says to me that we must just sit back as if we're on the airplane, relax, listen, and Sophia will give us a chance. My name is Freddie Adams. Morning, I'm chairperson of Economic Development, our Economic Development Committee in the National Council of Provinces, comprises of economic development, mining, and energy. Now, firstly, let me start off by apologizing for the minister, the department, because they are busy with a strategic planning workshop, which I have attended yesterday. So they won't be able to attend this briefing session. We have made an apology for them. We've also sent out an amended notice to indicate that the minister and the department won't be here. So the committee, I put that apology in front of you so that that you can take note that the minister has apologized and the department. We're going to start introducing ourselves for 2-3 minutes, and then we'll go over to the business at hand. I'll start with the members first. On my far left, you can introduce yourself.
Morning. my name is Bafunani Aaron Nguni, a member of the committee from the Free State.
Morning, my name is Jomo Nyambi, member of this committee from Mpumalanga Province.
Good morning, I'm Elder Van Lingen from the Eastern Cape.
Morning, my name is Colin Maina from the North West.
Morning, my name is Sarah Khale, I'm from Limpopo, where Kasasuminya.
I nearly thought, Honorable Dikali, you're saying you're family or relative of Castor Seminyak.
She's my neighbor.
Oh, okay.
Morning, my name is Nkansi Mushami, private secretary to Mr. Adam.
The lady next to me, yes?
I'm Grace Denizulu, Commerce Secretary for Economic Development.
Beautiful gentleman there.
Oh, Comrade Dan from Gauteng. Thank you.
I'm Edwin Conroy, researcher to the Office of the Chief Whip of the NCOP.
I'm Ivan Colley from Shell, South Africa.
Good morning, I'm Kenzie Mekwa from Total South Africa.
Good morning, I'm Mike Fitt from Engine.
Good morning, I'm Graham Rager from Chevron.
Good morning, I'm Alassane Cesaro from the African Development Association.
Morning, I'm James McGrady from Chevron.
Good morning, I'm Sean Oliver from the
Good morning, I'm a member of the public. Good. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Kim from Farming to Mining Group.
Good morning, Nick Garvey from Cabin. Sorry? 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 The gentleman walking behind us here like a policeman.
My name is Kisakam Kilin, and I'm the committee secretary for the Trading Interval Relations, which works and play with the Select Company Economic Development. Thank you.
Quite a mouthful, but welcome. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this meeting. As you know, the worrying of the jet fuel shortages that happened at OR Tambo, but also, as you know, that there's a 2010 World Cup and anything beyond 2010. grave concern from the committee to get the feedback from the minister and the work, the task team, and the PIA and captains of industry in the fuel industry, specifically in the aviation fuel industry, to find out what's happening. And I want to, from the outset, thank you for availing yourself, Sophia, and the captains of industry from the fuel industry, PetroSA, Chevron, and all the Shell engine, Total, BP. Is BP here? No? I haven't heard BP, but we left that PetroSA, and thank you for availing yourself to come and address the committee. We have circulated some documents, honorable members, for the committee, but I think I'm not sure whether we have enough, or can we make some copies for the captains of industry around here. That's the briefing report. The department would have been here, but like I said, they are busy with the strategic planning workshop, which have to be finished because the minister has to present the department's strategic plan to cabinet. And it was unfortunately that they were pressed for time. Last week it was Mineral Resources one, and this week it's their one. And also, they had it scheduled for Thursday, Friday, but they have to cancel because the minister and the director general had to accompany the president to Angola. So they couldn't make it that time. But there's a document that has been produced by the task team on the current situation regarding jet fuel shortages and challenges facing the industry. And this is Department of Energy's perspective. We would also, but I think the gentleman that just came in now can introduce himself.
Sinclair, Northern Cape.
Thank you, Honourable Sinclair, and welcome. So, I think before we deal with the document, we can then hand over to Sophia. If the captains of the other industry and from the other companies, petroleum companies, would like to add anything or that, please indicate and you will be allowed the time. As this is a democratic parliament, we will allow you democratically the space to utilize. I think, I'm not sure whether Mr. Gioclardi or Mr. Cipollaro will lead the delegation, but feel free, sir, the space is yours. Just before you start, are there any questions from the members or anything from the member side? None. The floor is yours, sir. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, we have some of my colleagues from, as you mentioned, from the other oil companies who are here this morning. And as I go on, I'm going to be asking them to, if there's anything that they would like to add. First of all, Mr. Chairman, I don't know how much time we've got, so as to make sure that we don't overstep the. Because there may be some time constraints on your part, and, so that we can determine the speed at which we proceed.
We've got until 12:45, because at 1 o'clock is the chairperson's forum. So we've got until 12:45.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. That's helpful. Mr. Chairman, I would like to start off by just briefly giving you a little bit of information on SAPIA, how it is constituted, the sort of business that we look at, and hopefully, and then move from there and get into some substantive matters regarding today's meeting. SAPIA represents the common interest of the petroleum industry and aims to promote an understanding of the industry's contribution to economic and social progress. That's really why we constituted ourselves. And its membership is currently BP, Chevron, Engen, PetroSA, Sasol, to Cheryl and to Tom. Our objectives at SAPIA is to find solutions to the many pressing issues facing the industry, to be a source of information, and to encourage cooperation among members and encourage good ethics and governance. At SAPIA, we support a liberalized market reached by through an orderly, fair, and inclusive process. We support the empowerment of historically disadvantaged South Africans, the upliftment of rural areas, the sustainable development of our nation, cooperation with government in the achievement of national economic objectives or goals, an economic climate that fosters competitive efficiency, and continuation of world-class standards in our petroleum industry. Chairman, at this point, I'd like to turn to the jet fuel saga, if you will, at OR Tambo International Airport. Just by way of background, OR Tambo International Airport receives products from the Transnet refined products pipeline from Durban to Johannesburg through a dedicated feeder pipeline. The dedicated pipeline from Natref refinery and rail tank cars from the coastal refineries. That's how jet fuel gets transported to OR Tambo International Airport. Existing fuel shortage and distribution facilities consist of 9 tanks with a combined storage capacity is 46,500 cubic meters. Natref and rail tanker supply capacity 22,500 cubic meters, and a multi-product pipeline supply of 24,000 cubic meters. And Chevron South Africa manages and operates petroleum facilities on behalf of the consortium consisting of BP, Engine, Shell, and Total. And for this to work well, we all have to collaborate and work together to make sure that nothing falls within the cracks. Now, during early August, supply shortages of jet fuel were experienced at OR Tambo International Airport. These shortages resulted from a number of potential factors, including inter alia, low opening stock holding at OR Tambo jet fuel terminal coming into July due to the production problems at an inland refinery during June. A number of logistical problems were experienced by Transnet during July, leading to inadequate and irregular supply to the airport and a gradual depletion of stock. Cessation of joint supply planning due to Competition Act considerations leading to slower independent reactions. And that's an important point, Mr. Chairman, because for us to be able to collaborate and get together to plan, we need to be extremely careful because of the competition laws. Otherwise, you know, we could really find ourselves in trouble. Now, stocks dropped from the normal working level of 5 days down to 2 days. Through a concentrated logistics program, including increased road haulage and tankering by airline, stock levels are now back to normal. The Minister of Trade and Industry designated the petroleum industry for the purpose of the relevant section of the Competition Act. What we did here, Mr. Chairman, in view of all this, we approached the Competition Commission with a view to, and with the help of the Department of Energy, to see if we could not get an exemption, and that is in progress as we speak. SAPIA has preparing an exemption application, as I say, to allow interaction between members of the industry teams dealing with issues such as product supply, logistics planning, pipeline operations, shipping, etc., to maintain current and ongoing security of supply. And to that end, the Minister of Energy has established a supply task team headed by the Department of Energy to further investigate the shortages of the jet fuel supply plans for the 2010 Soccer World Cup. Objectives, obviously, are to ensure that successful event without fuel supply, in other words, the 2010, there are no disruptions. And this is the single largest event for South Africa, and we're all sensitive to that. And therefore, this competition exemption is required urgently for industry-wide event to happen. Now, as I said earlier on, Mr. Chairman, we are working on this, and I must say that as far as I'm aware, the situation at Oatambo is certainly gone back to normal. We have enough shortages, enough stock, and we'll continue to do so, and especially with this task team, to make sure that we are on top of things. Things don't just happen, and then, you know, we wake up later in the day when things have gone bad. Having said so, Mr. Chairman, I think when we looked at the brief, we kind of like felt that, you know, the jet fuel situation is kind of like one specific area that we want to focus on, but certainly there's a lot more within our industry that we wanted to share with you as to what the sort of problems that we have or the challenges that we think exist, and then see how, and some of those we are addressing as ourselves, and some of which may be of interest to yourselves, and that you may be able to perhaps help us overcome some of those problems. One of the key things, especially for the kind of industry that we are in, is the current global economic situation that we face is obviously a concern. And as an industry, we are facing a number of short and long-term challenges, which include also the current global economic situation, economic regulation and legislation, skill shortage within our industry, infrastructure development, environmental issues, future fuels requirements, socioeconomic issues, crime and security, industry transformation. Those are some of the key things that we certainly are looking at as an industry. The current global economic crisis underscores the urgency of sustainable development, mutually reinforcing the balance of economic, social, and environmental progress. This highlights the urgency to work efficiently and cooperatively to develop the policy and financial drivers required to provide energy access and security. And the following are key issues identified by the International Chamber of Commerce on Environment and Energy. All energy options are important. No one size fits all. Sector-wide changes can take decades because of the nature of the industry. So a coordinated international effort is needed to ensure an enabling framework and market. We need national policies to take current realities and international agreements into account. This is a capital-intensive industry, so long-term investments should be facilitated in light of the need for global and local capital allocation. Energy efficiency should be a key focus and needs to be promoted. Mr. Chairman, I think on this particular point, conservation of energy is equally important, and it's also in the interest of our industry that that happens. And I don't think date we are doing much as South Africans to actually educate our people to conserve energy, be it fuel, gas, or anything. And maybe that's one thing that we need to do. We can do jointly together to try and make sure that our people understand the importance of energy conservation. Technology cooperation and deployment should be fostered, and a variety of market mechanisms fit for national local circumstances have to be identified. The oil industry is a vital component to the South African economy, operating in a highly regulated environment. As you know, our industry in South Africa is regulated. It's unlike in other countries. So just to take a quote out of the Energy Security Master Plan, it reads, "Energy is the blood that runs through the veins of every economy. It is to the survival of an economy what water is to the survival of the human body." Unquote. So in order to meet the country's liquid fuels needs now and into the future, the industry needs predictable regulations to encourage investment by existing and new entrants. The returns need to be sufficient in order to reward investment across the value chain. And investment returns need to be sustainable, and skill shortages need to be urgently addressed. And I do know that, Mr. Chairman, various member companies of SAPIA have, within their own organizations, have various programs in order to address this particular issue. In the past, industry margins were controlled through the marketing, you know, what we refer to as an MPA, but certainly that method is outdated. Agreement between ourselves and the department that method mechanism is outdated, that it needs relooking. And I'm pleased to say at this moment, industry is currently working with the department and their consultants to develop a new mechanism that will meet the above objectives. And one of the other things, of course, is the shortage of capacity within government itself to handle regulatory requirements. You know, we're having to apply for licenses and get these approvals, EIAs, and all the rest of it. And sometimes, for those of us who are in industry who have to do certain things within a given time frame, find it extremely difficult and sometimes frustrating because we are unable to get some of the licenses and the stuff that we require and the approvals that we require in time. And as you may have noted, if you go back and you look at the representation of SAPIA, most of those are multinational companies. And we're having to go back to our principals and say, well, I could not meet my objectives this year because I couldn't get this and I couldn't get that. And, of course, the next time you apply for funding, then you can't get it because you can't deliver. Because we're having to compete with some of our colleagues in other parts of the world for funding so that we can expand and be able to invest. So that can be a bit of a problem. We've got a graph here which certainly probably in a graphic way would show that how that industry costs, which are represented by a red arrow, red line, the costs are going up. And of course, if you look at it between the time, say, 2002 to 2006, almost the same level. And of course, if you look at it now, demand has dropped down to 2009, is really down below. Now, again, the volumes have come down, and this is as a result of the economic environment and so on, so people are not really buying as much as they did before. And when it comes to large contracts where we supply mines and big consumer customers, many of those have closed or have cut down on their production as a result of the economic environment. So that's I don't know, with your permission, Mr. Chairman, the areas which I've thus far covered, if any of my colleagues here have anything to add. Anything to add? Thank you. I'll proceed. The other area that we looked at, Mr. Chairman, is the infrastructure development. Additional petroleum product pipelines and tankage capacity are needed to serve the major vital inland market. As you would notice, most of the refineries are at the coastal areas, and we're having to move product from the coastal areas into the inland market. And we're fully aware and conscious of the fact that fuel shortages will harm the country's economy and derail the government's projected growth targets. The government's energy security master plan calls for investment in the building of new pipelines and tankage facilities, which will include some participation by the private sector. Beneficial conditions should be created by government for the industry and other private players to invest in new tankage and pipeline capacity. Mr. Chairman, that's again an important area I would suggest, particularly if one looks at those people that have aspirations to get into this industry. There's certainly space there for people who may be interested in building tanks, storage facilities in the inland market and so on, rather than maybe get terribly worried about, the importation of crude and some stuff that may be erroneous. But this is really an opportunity for individuals who might be interested in it. And discussions with competition authorities are underway, as I mentioned before, to allow stakeholders to jointly discuss security of supply issues in the short to long term. Of course, regulatory certainty and increased capacity is a necessity for efficient development of required infrastructure. One of the areas, Mr. Chairman, that we're focusing on, and a lot of work has gone into this, is the whole area of future fuels. What we sometimes refer to as clean fuels. And the reason for clean fuels is to improve air quality in sensitive areas, reduction in CO2, and enable clean and more efficient vehicle technology. And SAPIA developed a long-term roadmap for discussion with the relevant regulators. The roadmap outlines a suggested approach that would be in the best interest of South Africa as a whole. And to this end, Mr. Chairman, we are constantly in discussions not only with the authorities, but also with our counterpart at the motor manufacturers, so as to make sure that there's agreement in terms of technology, the specifications would be the same. And I must say that good progress is being made in this regard. Just to share with you what the roadmap looks like. You would recall that about, I think, if I'm not mistaken, in 2006, thereabouts, we introduced lead-free, what we called at that time lead phase-out, and that was done during that time. And one of the lessons that we learned at the time was that, and there was, it resulted in a lot of shortages. One of the lessons that we learned at the time was the fact that if you go for a big bang approach and it's not well managed, you could have disaster on your hands. And it is for this reason that we decided utilizing some of the skills that we have within our respective organizations in SAPIA, got a team to really work through and think through all these things. And we've looked at international experience, places like Australia and other places and Europe, and just to make sure that as we proceed, we do not make the same mistakes again. And let me ask one of our experts here, Mike Stitch, just to speak to the roadmap a little bit. Mike, would you care to just touch on the roadmap?
And what we've tried to establish is
A long-term roadmap. If we can just take it back, that first green block represents the specifications that are currently at the filling stations that you see. We see a big step change in specification, which we've termed Clean Fuels 2, that is largely lined up with the EN specifications, the EN specs that were defined in 2004. And then a further phase, and this is going into the latter part of the session, which we've determined as Clean Fuel 3, which again ties in with the European specifications. But again, it's tailor-made for the South African conditions and considers the South African conditions, at the same time as allowing the motor manufacturers to introduce new technology into the country. So we feel that roadmap is really designed in the benefit of the country as a whole. Just to the left-hand side of the roadmap, those brown blocks are the vehicle exhaust emissions that will be enabled by the fuels that are put together. So that the fuel in itself provides clean burning, if you like, for the vehicles. And there's various standards that have been set up in Europe, defined by Euro 4 and Euro 5 standards, which we see being introduced over time. The current fuel specs allow the benefits to be extracted from Euro 2 technology that's on the market. I think another important leg, and we talk about a three-legged stool, and those are the primary two legs and probably the two legs that everybody thinks about. But there's a very important leg, which is the inspection and maintenance of vehicles. And included in inspection and maintenance is the emission checks that are done. We're currently represented on the steering committee with the Department of Transport putting together their periodic vehicle testing program, which should be coming out shortly. So that program addresses both road safety and is now going to address vehicle emissions as well.
Oh, pardon me, Chairperson. I just wanted the gentleman to please clarify this, the EN, and then also for us to be able to understand the distinction between the three, the two, and the one. I don't think I really understood. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I won't go into all the details, but there's a book written for petrol and diesel specifications. The current book, I think the main thing is it doesn't have lead in petrol. I think that's very clear. But one of the other very important components of petrol and diesel, because of the way technology has changed over time, is that the technology is sensitive to one component in petrol and diesel, and that is sulfur. And currently, if we just use sulfur as the guideline, then we see a step change from the 500 parts per million that's currently in the fuel, and this is naturally occurring. It comes from the crude, so it's not like lead that we actually put into the fuel. It's just part of the mix that you get from the refinery. But we will, in Clean Fuels 2, introduce processes in the refineries to cut that sulfur down to 50, and then in Clean Fuels 3, that will reduce down again to the region of 10, which is generally understood as sulfur-free or zero sulfur. And those are the steps going forward. We have aligned these fuel specifications specifications with the EN specs, which are the European fuel specifications. I think most of our motor manufacturing facilities in the country are either European-based or, if they, let's say, Japanese-based, generally the specs are taken from Europe. So I think we're clear that the way forward for us is to adopt the European specs as a guideline. As I said, they have been tailored specifically for our country, the altitudes that you see in Gauteng and the like have been taken into account, as well as our mix of synthetic and crude refineries, which is, I think, unique in the world. Thank you. Yes, but there's, as I said, a whole book written on the specs, so I think if there's one thing that sits to your mind, sulfur, I think, is a good guide for us all.
One thing about reducing sulfur in
the
fuel
is
allowed.
Honorable
Fernandez? Honorable Chair, can I ask Mr. Steed the indication of 2004 and 2009? Is that the date the specs were written, or is there a by when date attached to it? Because if you read the bottom line, cost to the industry is so much, either from 2009 onwards, because that's the vibe that I've been picking up, or is the deadline 2009 and we've got 4 months left?
And your colleague next to you.
Okay, thank you. We could spend a lot of time on timing, because that's really one of the key issues for us. I think particularly coming out of the change to Clean Fuels 1, where we made the change in December 2005, and the specifications which we had to make all the changes to only came after the fact. And certainly with the sorts of expenditure that we have to make this time around as an industry, upwards to 40 billion rand, we need that certainty, and I think that's why we've done all the work we've done to try and get that certainty, especially in timing. The 2004 and 2009 are the dates when the European Parliament approved those specifications in Europe, and the specifications and the vehicle emission standards. So Euro 4 has been around since about 2005 in Europe, and the new Euro 5 specs have just come out this year.
Is it on the same speed? Same point? Because I just want to get before that. Okay.
Chair, I feel that if maybe we can just disturb if ever we are getting confused. But if it's not a question of confusion, let them finish the presentation. Okay. Then at the end, we are complicating. Because we end up complicating some of the things that are going to be clarified in the interstate. So that is why I'm saying, hey, members, maybe we can only stop if we think that whatever that they are presenting, then it keeps confusing to us. Then we can clarify on that one and go on and finish.
I think the Honourable Montisha was a bit confused with EN and the other things. So you got clarification on that. The Chevron representative? Okay, you can carry on. Yeah, sorry, just before you carry on, remember the process normally and the line that we normally take is that we finish the presentation and then we ask questions. But questions of clarification. Because we don't want you to go through the presentation with a confused mind. So that's why I've allowed the Honorable Montisi to ask the question. You can carry on, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, the footnotes there suggest that the cost to do all this will be between 20 and 40 billion rand. The reason for this cost, where does it come from? It comes from the fact that our refineries in South Africa are not really at a level where they could handle that. So we're going to have to reconfigure our refineries in order to produce the new product. That's where the costs are going to be. So that's the reconfiguration of our refineries and all the rest of it. That would mean design, construction, and commissioning, and all the rest of it, so as to be able to meet those specifications. I'd like to turn a little bit on the socioeconomic side of these things, of some of the challenges that we face as an industry. One of the challenges really for us, particularly at our retail outlets, is crime. And it continues to escalate. Categories of crime against the petroleum industry into three main groups. We can categorize them into three main groups. One is violent crime, which includes robberies, ATM crime on service station forecourts, perpetrated with explosives, attacks on drop safes with explosives, and cash in transit robberies on forecourts. Bulk fuel theft, we've had some of our trucks hijacked, and other thefts including housebreaking and all the rest of it. Commercial crime, including fraud and corruption. So these are some of the really issues that we're having to grapple with on a day-to-day basis. Just to share with you, in 2008, robberies at service stations are on an upward trend. This is represented by the graph that we're showing there. SAPS crime statistics indicate a 23% increase in violent crimes perpetrated against the business sector. Service station robberies increased from 590 incidents in 2007 to 785 incidents in 2008. The total number of violent crimes increased from 875 in 2007 to 1,139 in 2008. What are we doing about this? Mr. Chairman, we have formed what is known as the Oil Industry Security Forum, which includes all our senior members who are involved in the security of our facilities. And they focus on crime prevention, security issues, and crime fighting projects. Monthly meetings are being held, which are attended by SAPIA members, retail representative bodies, and the South African police. Cooperative action among the industry bodies to address crime problems. Oil companies and service station owners are managing strict cash handling procedures, introducing innovative cash handling equipment and procedures. Enhanced service station design centered on the installation of improved forecourt fighting and access restrictions to sensitive areas. Minimum standards for closed circuit television. Installation of bulletproof glass convenience stores, installation of panic buttons, establishment of emergency response links, and enhanced SAPS sector and community policy and forum approach. These are some of the things that we're involved in. Now, Mr. Chairman, you've noticed that, you know, we've moved now, we've got bulletproof this, and we've got all the rest of it. And all these things cost money, and we're having to do all these things in order to protect the facilities, not only the facilities themselves, because more than often, customers who may not be aware, they drive onto their forecourt, a robbery is in progress, and that can be very harmful. Perimeter lighting is also important, especially at night, to make sure that at least to try and really make sure that we can keep our facilities. We share examples of best practice within the industry so as to make sure that we can learn from each other. We liaise very closely with the SAPS senior management. We do full investigation of every crime-related incident. and the formulation of useful security, safety, crime prevention, and governance guidelines for the industry and its security service providers. We provide specialized training programs for service station personnel in the area of robbery prevention and survival techniques. Mr. Chairman, these are some of the things that we're doing. We certainly can do more, and we continue on an ongoing basis to evaluate the situation and to try and improve our safety standards at our various locations. Let me move on to one other important aspect that we are engaged in as SAPIA, and that is the transformation of our industry. We signed in 2000 the Liquid Fuel Charter, which was the first charter to have ever been signed in the country. It took us many months of negotiations and everything else. As a matter of fact, when we were negotiating this particular aspect of transformation, at that time we didn't even know what we were going to call the document at the end. And after we had done all these things, we said, what are we going to tell the minister we've done? And he turned around and said, why don't we call it a charter? And, of course, then the charter and many other charters have followed since then. The Liquid Fuel Charter, which we signed in 2000, is to ensure sustainable presence, ownership and control by approximately 25% of historically disadvantaged South Africans across the industry value chain. And this we set in 10 years' time, so this gives us 2010 as the date. SAPIA members are the first industry in South Africa, as I said, to enter into a voluntary charter, committing itself to advancing black economic empowerment. All privately owned members have concluded equity ownership deals. It's certainly gratifying to see that all our members, Mr. Chairman, have changed their business models in order to align themselves with the letter and the spirit of the charter. By management control, we mean board of directors and senior management levels are steadily increasing, with 36% of black board members and 11% black women participation. We also focus on preferential procurement or affirmative procurement. The industry's BE procurement spend is 42% of total budget for goods and services, excluding BE spend on crude oil and petroleum products. We engage in enterprise development. Particularly in the retail network, and the socioeconomic development, the industry average spend on corporate social investment is over 175 million rand, and this spend includes areas of national and sector priorities. Employment equity is also an issue, and the representation thus far industry-wide is increasing at mid and senior levels. Top management, we're talking about 32.4%. Senior management, 37.1%. Specialists and mid-management, 55.6%. Skills, technical, 70.9%. And of course, if we take the total staff of that, we're sitting at 70.9% as well. I've mentioned the question of skills shortage, Mr. Chairman, in the past. Previously, as we've been talking, skills development is definitely an important issue, particularly because of our industry's uniqueness. And all our member companies are in one or the other engaged in developing skills internally. We have leadership in oil and energy program. 147 industry employees graduated since the program's inception in 2006. Artisan skills training projects. Currently, we have 1,400 learners in the system. 209 learners have qualified at MQF level 4 trade qualification. The project is currently structured to produce an excess of 500 MQF level 4 certificated learners per year from 2009 onwards from this year. And then we continue to identify skills and critical skills. This has not been smooth sailing, Mr. Chairman. The challenges are enormous. And we certainly do not see this as just a once-off event, but it's really we have embarked on a long journey. And the challenges come up and we have to deal with them. There's certainly a need to increase credible BEE suppliers. In other words, credible, not fronts, but people that can really produce the kind of goods and services, particularly goods that we require at our service stations as well as at our refineries, and not fronts. Availability of accredited petroleum industry learning programs, we're working very hard through our office here to try and make sure that we have appropriate training programs for our people. That we don't want someone to be suitably qualified at Chevron, and when he moves to engine, they say, no, you're not suitably qualified. We want to make sure that the standardization and everybody understands exactly where we are. Increasing the representation of people with disabilities is one other area that we're focusing on. We haven't done much in that area, I must say, and we've become aware that we need to do something there. But despite all these challenges, industry remains on track to achieve the Liquid Fuels Charter aspirations, and we are confident of meeting the other challenges discussed here today. Mr. Chairman, in conclusion, we've tried to deal with all, I just wanted to point out that we are dealing with an industry which is important for the economic survival of the country. And we need to be able to run these businesses efficiently so as to make sure that we can continue to grow our economy. And we are partners, as we see ourselves, particularly with government. We need to work together in order to move the country forward. And I must say that so far we have had nothing but cooperation from the department in many ways. And we're very pleased that particularly the ministers have been very encouraging and always trying to do whatever they can in order to help us. So I would hope that members of your committee as well will come on board and try and help us in whichever way they can to advance the course of this industry so that we can, in the short term, make sure that 2010 becomes a success as we all want it to be. And beyond that, make sure that we have an economy that is growing. We can continue to provide employment opportunities to our people and be able to compete in the global market as we should. I thank you.
Very well. Thank you very much, Mr. James. It's your plan.
My name is Bucha Stone.
Thank you very much. Petro S.A., you want to add anything?
Nothing I can say.
Nothing I can say.
Well, we're part of the industry, but not on the same floor side, but as in discussion, we can be part of the industry.
Chevron?
It was fine.
You're fine. Mr. Pete?
Yes,
Madam? Sir?
No, I think we'll also add the debate on how they are able to contribute.
Wonderful. Members, this floor is yours. Okay. take questions and we'll get to answers. Honorable Nguni, are there any other more hands? Honorable Chen, followed any other more hands? Followed by Honorable Nyambi. Okay.
Thank you, Chen. On the cause of the shortage of the shoe at the bottom, they are mentioning about the three reasons. Can they perhaps pinpoint the exact cause? If there could be one exact cause, they know these are the main causes of the shortage of shoe at the airport. Besides perhaps logistics, if it was logistics, as they say it was logistics, if it was not logistics, or it was because of the Competition Commission Act, because they cite the Competition Commission Act as the main reason. The one thing, another question, Chairperson, is on my second question, Chairperson, is on that the Competition Commission Act, whether they want total exemption from it or they want some exemption from it, because it seems they are citing that if they coordinate their work to supply fuel, then they'll be charged for collusion or whatever. But I think we're talking of fuel here to the jet industry. And if it is they want an exemption for coordination purposes, I don't see, we'll hear from them. I don't see why they want perhaps a total exemption from the Act, because the Act seeks to bring about competition so that as consumers we get a better service. So those are just two questions. What are the main cause of the shortage, and do they want total exemption from the Act or portion of it?
Thanks so much, Chairperson. I think part of my question has been covered by my colleague already. And obviously, I think as you mentioned in the presentation, we as a member of Parliament, especially as a member of this committee, would very much like to come on board and to provide whatever the assist which we can. So therefore, I'm looking at this challenging which is you mentioned about economic regulation and legislation. Can you maybe just be more specified in which way which we'll be able to assist? Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Let me join and welcome the detailed technical but clarified report that is asking. Honorable Nguni covered my first question. The second one would be around issues of transformation. You were able to indicate the number of black women that are participating and some blacks in your board. If maybe you can indicate to us what are your targets in relation to what we have here. Then the second one, around the very same issues of the transformation, where you are talking about industry transformation, there's a bullet where you talk about all privately owned members have concluded equity ownership deals. Maybe you can unpack this one. I don't understand it. Thank you.
On the wrong teacher.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm not quite sure what slide this is, but it's immediately after the OR Tambo International Jet Fuel. Oh, the exact slide is Jet Fuel Supply Shortage. It's more or less the same question my colleagues have answered. I think what has to be answered, the actual problems, as my colleague has said, I'm looking at the reasons which have been outlined here. Now, the first one is low opening stock holding.
doesn't really make much sense to us, but hopefully it can be clarified. And then a number of logistical problems experienced by Transnet. We are not sure what problems Transnet experienced. And then the third one is the cessation of joint supply planning due to the competition act. That one obviously leads us to the industry, because the industry has got a lot in common, and they are affected currently. Like the challenges that they have outlined in another slide, the current global economic situation, regulation and legislation, skill shortage, infrastructure, and issues of security and industrial transformation. Now, some of the issues they actually want to discuss with the competition board. Now, in view of the similar, challenges that the industry faces, one becomes very sensitive in terms of the next issues that you wish to discuss with the competition forum, because it moves from the basis that we are the same industry and we have got common challenges. The global market is affecting us. Therefore, the competition board needs to be more sensitive and understanding towards the stakeholders, which would border very close to, like my colleague has said, price fixing. I think this global problem that we have, our concern as public representatives is the extent to which it impacts on ordinary people who are poor, who cannot be able to survive. Now, if this type of issues would be discussed with the view of, the competition board being lenient on the issue of price fixing, it would be disastrous. Because we are thinking of paraffin that is being sold in the township and so on, the price of bread and so on. So I'm just raising that concern, hoping that at least we have sufficiently sensitized the industry, what would require a response in other than this.
Thank you,
Chair. My question is on the stakeholder collaboration. I was wondering to clarify, stakeholder collaboration is required. Is this suggesting that there was no collaboration prior to the incident? I think the other question, Oram Vivian, has covered it, of the stock opening into July. When we realize this, what measures did we put in place to try and circumvent the problem? The last chairperson is on the issue of transformation. That in 2000, outside of 2000, where he talked about approximately 5% of the historical representation of Africa. Now, historically disadvantaged South Africans are millions of people. Now, if you say 25% of them, can realize this? And also, does this tendency of, there are big names. There are big names, and those big names are then regarded as historically. For instance, if I'm calling my union, a member of parliament, I've got access to information law. In everything that has to deal with, that has to go to the historically disadvantaged people, it will come to me. Because because of my car and all of that. What are we doing to ensure that it does not happen? It goes to this 25%, but I'm saying 25% of the Eastern current disadvantage people. I would really appreciate if you can find expression. But are we going to realize it next year? Because 2010 is next year. And how far are we? Because this thing was done in 2000. And how far are we now? Because it's 2009. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. James?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try to respond to some of the questions, and if I miss anything, try to remind me, and then I'll also refer to my colleagues here who will probably be ready to help. I'd like to deal with the question of regulations first, if I may. We are a regulated industry. In other words, pump price and the rest of the other things that we do are regulated by law. And certainly, it's important and that there be certainty, in other words, so that we know what the law says. It's like knowing the rules of the game, so as to make sure that when you make your planning, you know what you're up against, if anything at all. Our industry, and I've been in this industry for many years, our industry has evolved over a long period of time. You would recall that during the apartheid days, very little information was available to the public and to anyone else who was in the industry, where it was going, what was happening and all. Since the new dispensation, our industry has evolved. We continue to work closely with the department in order to really look at the regulations and to see and to make some improvements, and the department has been very helpful in this regard in bringing about changes to the industry. It's an evolution. We continue to work at it on a day-to-day basis. And certainly there will come a time when we've done all that hard work and this predictability, etc. The point that we're trying to make here is the importance of predictability, that you know the rules of the game, you know what to expect, and then you play according to those. So that's the emphasis that we're trying to put. So if you're operating in a non-regulated environment, obviously the decisions that you take would be driven by very much your plans and your strategy as to where you want to be. But if you're operating in a regulated industry, certainly you have to take that into account, what the regulations say, so as to make sure that you're not out of line. And when you do your strategies, you have to make sure that as you work through your strategies, you are mindful of the environment in which you operate. So that I hope that answer suffices. Let me turn to transformation, and probably I'll deal with some of the questions that had been raised. The target when the charter was negotiated, the target that was placed was 25% of the total value chain. What that really means is that historically disadvantaged South Africans would have the opportunity to own 25% of that entity. Now, there could be 40 million of them, or even more, but they would own 25% of that particular entity and the total value chain. Not, you'd find that in some instances, you know, certain parts of the organization are ring-fenced and all this, and not given the total value chain, but what we are saying is the total value chain, that's the spirit and the letter of the charter. So, big names, yes. We hear about big names from time to time. But again, I think that was against that backdrop that you had this broad-based Black Empowerment Act to make sure that not only big names, but as many people as possible get the opportunity to can participate. If one looks at some of the deals, certainly these are looking for partners, you would certainly want to make it as broad-based as you possibly can be. And that's why, in some instances, we read in the media, it includes some women's groups or disabled groups and so on and so forth. So as to try and make sure that one moves away from the big name syndrome. So as I say, I'm not privy to each and every deal that each and every company has done, but in general, that's the kind of focus that we're looking at.
If I may, as far as the industry is concerned, we've met that target of 25% on that issue of ownership. I just want to add on that, because that was a specific question of where we are. We've met that target of 25%.
There's another question just related to that, which said, I think the words were like privately something members. What really is probably an unfortunate use of words, I think what it really means is that each and every company has its own arrangement or agreement with those people that are participants in the shareholding. So okay, in this instance, I've just been advised, and thank you very much, that it obviously this excludes Petro SA in that regard. We're talking about these other companies. Going back to the steel a little bit, and I don't want to use to have this to create the impression that Competition Commission is a red herring here, because it would certainly not be fair. But I must say that certainly when we look at the jet fuel shortage at the time, our first bullet point was saying that there was a low opening stock level, stock holding. In other words, if we had to have 5 days stock, we probably had less. And I think if my memory serves me well, we probably Graham, how many days stock?
Well, we ended up going down to 2 days, but the point there was that prior to the
period opening in August, that there had been a rundown in stocks gradually. And I think in answer to the question, was there one particular issue that led to the shortage? The answer to that is no, and that's usually the case in these sort of things. It's a combination of a number of factors, though. And one of those factors was that because of production problems at one of the inland refineries back in July, the opening stock position was lower than what would normally be the case. I don't have the figures. Maybe one of the other members knows exactly what the opening stock was in July, but instead of being 5.5, it was possibly, say, 4 days stock as it had slowed down. And then that was built on by a number of problems that Transnet experienced in getting product to ORT. And so that again added to the problem. And one of the major issues, as James referred to earlier, was the fact that because of the problems that the industry has seen in with the Competition Commission and the need to obtain exemptions to certain activities that the industry has carried out, some of the committees that had previously been in place that used to coordinate stock and to ORT and also planning of stock throughout the country had been put on hold and been disbanded, so they were not in place. So whilst individual members may have seen a problem, there wasn't a collective understanding of that problem, and there wasn't a collective solution that was put in place in order to resolve the problem. So you put all of these things together, and suddenly the stock level gets down to 2 days, and suddenly me there is a crisis. And, you know, that's how these things often evolve. If you don't have the ability to be able to handle what is a complex coordinated problem in a coordinated fashion, you've got everybody trying to solve the problem in their own way, it doesn't work efficiently. And that's the point that we're trying to make, and we're making with the Competition Commission, with the strong backing from DOE, on the basis that there is a need to get an exemption to allow this type of planning to go ahead. And I think in answer to the question regarding price fixing or whether this is an exemption of the Total Competition Act, it's only those specific activities that an exemption is being requested for, or that are centered around the planning function and the need for companies to be able to get together and coordinate the planning that goes ahead. And that involves not just the oil industry, but it also involves Transnet and a number of other government agencies as well, in order to be able to efficiently plan and implement the logistical plans that need to be put in place.
I think that speaks also to stakeholder collaboration that's one of the members raised. The importance of people getting together in order to work together to try and solve problems. Because if you take, for example, in this particular instance, jet fuel at Oatumbo, you have a consortium and those people need to work together to ensure that things don't fall within the cracks and make sure that they move forward. So that's against that backdrop that this stakeholder collaboration becomes important. Now, I just want to address quickly the question that was one of the members raised about, you know, price fixing and the rest of it. In this country, our prices are regulated. So as much as you know, you can't just, your pump prices are regulated and that's it, right? Which is different from other countries where you have an unregulated market. That's the first. The second thing is that certainly we are very sensitive, and the Competition Commission has been very helpful, and together with the department, in ensuring that things like market allocation, prices, and stuff like that do not form part of any discussion. We can show you some of the minutes of our meetings. This is just not the matter. What we discuss is our issues around supply. How do we make sure that we meet the requirement, particularly in the inland market, where we're having to move product from coastal areas into the inland market to make sure that we don't run dry. Running dry is the key thing that on a day-to-day basis all of us monitor to make sure that the country does not run dry, because that's important. Otherwise, the wheels would certainly come to a standstill. We currently work also with Eskom. As you know, they have their own problems, and we work with them on an ongoing basis to make sure that our refineries continue to run 365 days a year, every day, every night, to make sure that we can continue to produce the fuel that we all require. So the question of competition certainly is an important one, and certainly we do not see anything sinister or anything like that. We believe that the Competition Commission in this regard is, and working together with them will help us shape our thinking, particularly as we go forward in making sure that we work together and we compete very fiercely on a day-to-day basis. But there are times when we need to get together and say, how do we fix this particular issue? Like, for example, if there's a shortage in land, how do we actually do that and make sure that we get the team together, we bring all the people together to fix that. But if we don't do that, that you are busy fixing it and somebody is busy fixing it on the other side, and at the end, nothing really gets done, and you're back to where you were. So you need to bring, to have coordination so as to make sure that it's done. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Correa.
I just wanted to make a point in regard to the member asking about what assistance we could require, we may need from bodies like yourself. Now, that's quite crucial. As my colleague pointed out earlier on, our industry is heavily regulated. I think in general terms, and I think the numbers are about more than 75% of our income, of our operations, is governed by regulation in this country. The entire value chain, from importing crude to refining it, transporting it, and selling it, every aspect of that is controlled by government regulation. So obviously, it is quite important that we work regularly with government to make sure that those things are handled efficiently. And I think, for me, there is in essence about it's five key areas where we, you know, the challenges that we face in the industry. The one issue is obviously around predictable regulation. Now, I've already been raised the point, and the point we want to make there is that the regulation, because we're governed by regulation, we want to make sure the rules are clear to everybody. So we operate within those frame, within that. And we know what we can, what we can't do. There must be no grey areas, because if it's a grey area, you know, it either leads to, you know, people doing something illegal, or you sit there and you wait and nothing happens. It's an impasse. And then what happens? The economy suffers. So we want clear, and the regulation obviously we want the regulation that we're talking about is that it must encourage economic development and growth, because that's what we want to do. I think the single most thing that we can do as an oil industry is to what we can deliver to the country is to create jobs. I mean, that is, I think, you know, we make no bones about it. We are, you know, in essence, we are profit. We want to make money, but you can't do it. You have to work together with other entities, with other operators. So we think, you know, what we can do is create growth and development, and by that we create jobs. And obviously, to do that, we require our costs and margins, which government manage and control, to be adjusted, you know, realistically. We don't want, you know, obviously, we don't want unrealistic margins and cost adjustments, but they must be free and they must be fair, so that the input cost of the economy that gives us the higher price that you pay at the pump creates the benefit elsewhere in the economy via jobs, or, you know, it builds, you know, it creates jobs and it grows the economy. The third issue is we talked about the supply constraints. We all know that we need to do a lot of work required with supply and distribution operations to manage it more effectively, more efficiently. That is the key challenge for us in the next 5 to 10 years. We've got to build more tanks. We've got to build a new pipeline. And I say we, it's industry, government, and other private sector members. The other issue with safety and security of ourselves, our staff, and also the general public, and mainly our retail side, is another key challenge for us. And I think the last issue is around, and I call it capacity building. But it's quite a broad issue with skills and training upgrade, but also alludes to economic empowerment of people who've been excluded from the economy. Now, and there, I mean, it's broad-based. Unfortunately, what has happened is when we signed the liquor fuels charter way back in November 2000, it was a document that I think was overtaken by the broad-based act that DTI eventually published. Because, you know, the problem with the liquor fuels charter, it didn't give you clear quantification of targets. It just said, by 2010 November, you must have 25% of your entire value chain in the hands of BEE partners, or BEE businesses. The board-based actor came after with specifically quantifies 4 or 5 key different areas where you must be in a board-based way, manage your business so that it complies with the Act. Now, that is what our target. And so we're saying we are in this country to operate in the laws of the country, so it must be board-based. So the capacity building encompasses both BEE and capacity building for skills training. So those 5 areas, in my point of view, is where we can advance the country. We require your assistance, because unfortunately what happens is we mainly interact with the Department of Energy, because that's our lead regulator. But from time to time, these things come up, and if we may be in a hidden impasse with them, we might come to you, you know, as another partner. I'm not saying it'll happen, but, you know, that is something you can add value. If these things come across your path, call us up and say, what is this all about? And then you'll come, and, you know, because these things are voted on in Parliament, we know. And I think that is where I believe you can add value to. Because I think, I believe, even myself, also my company, and also the peer members, that, you know, we are partners within the economy and within the government. As already we know, I mean, this is a fact that somebody also mentioned earlier on, there's a huge challenge for funds to develop industries around the globe. I mean, currently, I know within the oil industry, on average, $4 out of $5 goes to the East. So if a company has got $5 to invest, $4 goes to India, China, and maybe Brazil and Russia. So we've got $1 left to compete with everybody else. So, you know, and we all fight for it in my company, and they, you know. So, I mean, you can see the problems we've got. Angola, for the last 10 years, tried to build a refinery. Nobody wants to invest, and yet it is a most wonderful opportunity. But to give them 10 billion rand for a refinery, is just, people don't want to, $10 billion, people don't want to invest. And that is a challenge we face. And I think what government can do, obviously, is enable us to make decisions, you know, easier than maybe Brazil can or India can. Although it's difficult, but I think, you know, I'm certainly passionate about it, and I think we can. But how everybody pulls through, we can obviously do things in a better way.
Anything from the side of the industry? No? Okay, we move over to questions. Onabonguni? Just before Onabonguni starts, the members that you see in front of you are also members of what we call the National Council of Provinces. Because we are clustered trade and international relations, which includes Department of Trade and Industry. So we serve both clusters. Unfortunately, the chairperson has made, or that committee has made, an apology.
Thank you, Chair. I think the objective of this meeting is to get the effect of why there was a shortage. And the industry has cited a couple of reasons. Of which one of them was, or some of them is that they are talking about the Transnet, the low stock, the shutdown of the refinery. Now, we don't know. Perhaps they could throw more light on that. How do they supply SPA or AXA with fuel? Do they supply it as individuals, or do they supply it as a coordinated body, or according to per contract? You don't have their per contract. What does the contract stipulate? But I think any manager or a client, or whether you are a service provider, if you could see that stocks are running low, then according to the contract, you know that you shouldn't, stocks shouldn't run below such a level or such for so many days. Then you act so that you try to retain the contract because that's a service agreement. We don't know the price exception. We don't know the contract about the stocks. If the stocks are low, who amongst them must act first? Now, the way I see it, or the way it presents itself here, it comes across as if they are saying that the government is not running its business properly, because it appears as if they want to push for the exemption from the Competition Commission Act by citing this incident of low stock, you see, and by citing that, or rather by using 2010. Threats to leverage their points, or to push them on the point home. You know, if the competition, we don't get exemption from the competition commission, then you know the 2010 project might be in jeopardy. Meaning that we must push for the exemption. You see, that's the way it appears to me. And also, I'm just about some, you know, lot of questions in my mind. You know, in the book edited by the Professor Venturok, you know, Trickle Down, Trickle Down, it says that for a developmental state, you need, you know, a dedicated public service that is technically competent and well educated. The industry is citing some of the reasons as if they are a challenge to the industry, of which skills is one of them. On the slide, all these are things that the country is currently fighting for transformation. These are things that the government is doing so that there's economic growth, there's no development for everybody. But the industry is citing all those issues, you know, as if actually the country is not doing anything at all. That's why it certainly comes across as if government is not doing its job properly. And it is the one government out of this industry, so that it's not regulated. That's my vision. And lastly, in their statement, they say Serbia supports a liberated market free by an orderly inclusive process. I don't even reconcile that statement with the new administration. The political administration that is in now, that we're trying for a geographical state, of which these issues, you see, are some of the challenges when you think of a geographical state or the way, you know, we want to move. And the presenter said that the country does not, they don't want the country to run dry. My question is that what are they doing to make sure that the country does not run dry? Or how do you supply? You say, hey, you do not run the country run dry. There's just that, a lot of questions that come to my mind, or that I'd like the industry to respond. But really, the key issue that is that it seems as if they want to make use of these stock shortages to push for exemptions from the Competition Commission, or those pushes, of which it doesn't sound good to me. Mm. Again, you can't respond to this.
Dr. Kono? Dr.
Kono.
Sorry. And then Honorable Kinkwet.
Thank you, Chair. We've heard of the problems, which are obviously long-term problems. But I think today what we wanted to see is what are the solutions to the short-term problem, and that is 2011, which is 250 days away. We don't want aircraft to be stranded at OR Tambo, at Cape Town International, at Durban International, without fuel. What solutions does the industry have in mind? And if they can just sort of spell that out to us, please. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. If my memory serves me right, when the Springboks played against the Lions, Durban ran out of beer. Now, the gentleman here raised the issue to say, but there was quite a number of factors that led to the situation where the reserves were very low and so on. But wasn't one of those reasons the mere fact that we had such an influx of tourists into South Africa for the IPL and the rugby and so on and so forth? So that's my first question. The second issue, Chair, is I also stand at the point where the Honourable Member and Gruni stand in terms of this request that the petrol industry must be exempted from the Competition Commission. You know, one thing that I find very strange is that 90% of South Africa's petrol, you pay the same price. Wherever you go, it's the same price, majority of instances. And I still don't understand why the industry really comes and say, but we prepare to talk about the issue about the Competition Commission, but please exempt the issue of price. I don't understand. Am I missing something? Am I missing something?
Yeah. Okay. We'll get to the answer.
Now please answer me, guide me if I'm wrong. Thank you.
Before that, you know, about 2 or 3 years ago, we went as chairpersons on a study tour to Australia. And one of the things that we've engaged in was the deregulation of the fuel industry. And the Australians were telling us that you guys in South Africa are lucky. Don't deregulate. Because if you deregulate, you cut. The guy was specific, you cut your historically disadvantaged people, you cut their throats. Because some of these owners haven't got the money to buy petrol or gas in bulk. They haven't got the money to buy it in bulk. Rather regulate your price, then you know you've got a fair playing field. The playing field is level for everybody. Because if a person stays in Orlando or in Soweto or in Khayelitsha, he doesn't have to drive all the way through to Sea Point or Cape Town, where the petrol will be but less than there. You'll fill up there. So, you know, I hear that some of the industry that we have, when we came back, I spoke to some of the industry, some of the players in the industry, and they said to me, no, we must deregulate. And then you hear on other terms, no, don't deregulate. Specifically, the guys in the historically disadvantaged areas, they say, no, don't deregulate. You'll cut our throats, you'll kill us. So, if you can just elaborate a bit more on that, please. Over to you. I think, Mr.
Again, I will touch on some of the points and then refer to my colleagues to add. I want to talk about this competition. Maybe I will get it off the table this time around. The Competition Commission has been very helpful, and we have no problem with it at all. We have not asked that we be exempted from prices and stuff, or stuff like that. We have not asked for that. What we did was the Competition Commission became a little bit sensitive to the planning process where we could get together and as an industry, and they felt that that could result or constitute breach of the Competition Act. And therefore, we went back to our minister, and who was very helpful in arranging with the Competition Commission to try and see how we could continue to plan together without really going, being in breach of the law. Now, that's as far as that is concerned. So the industry was designated, and then we have to be specific in our applications to the Competition Commission as to what it is that we want to continue to do and the reasons thereof, and they will make a determination and whether and see whether yes, it's, we should or we should not. We are in no way using the Competition Commission in order to subvert or to avert anything at all. We are merely making sure, our desire is to make sure that we are in compliance with the provisions of the Act. If we're in doubt, we have to check just to make sure that we are not in breach. Because, and I'd like to state that many of our members here represent multinational companies that are operating in various parts of the world. And they are, the whole question of antitrust and all these other things are applicable throughout the world, and we need to be sensitive to that. And we need to make sure that we do not break the law. We operate in various parts of the world and in Africa and other parts, and we have to make sure that we operate in accordance with the laws of those countries. So there is no, and there has been no attempt on our part to use the Competition Act or antitrust law in order to try and gain advantage over for or leverage it for anything else. That's not been the case. We have merely engaged with them, and we think it's right and proper that we engage with them on an ongoing basis to make sure that we are fully in compliance with the laws of the country. So that's what this thing is all about. So I'd like to make it very clear that whatever we do, we are not using the Competition Act or the Competition Commission as an excuse not to do certain things. When it came to the issue of jet fuel, as my colleague said, we had, our stock levels were lower, And the reasons could be many, one of which, if Transnet, I mean, the weapons are not coming regularly to up there, or which could also be human error, where mistakes that were done on the other side, and they're not coming as they should be, that can cause problems. Also, when we have a shutdown or a breakdown in an inland refinery, and they're not producing, so they're not injecting anything in the pipeline, that can cause problems. And so on and so on. So the stock levels get depleted, and of course, you get into trouble. And that is why we need this constant and consistent approach so that we make sure that we watch this thing very closely, and that's what the task team is about, and that's what also the minister encouraged and formed this task team, just to specifically so that we make sure that this thing does not happen again. That's the reason. Now, let's go back to solutions, and I think that's an important one. One of the solutions to this problem is consistent and constant watching by industry players to make sure that we do not wait until the red lights start flickering. As we see those signs, then we need to take corrective action immediately so that we don't reach a stage where we run dry and this one member said, and planes don't land or do whatever. So that's exactly what we try to do. As a solution, consistent monitoring of the operation to make sure that we do not run into trouble. And that committee is formed, which was formed by the minister, which all of us, the consortium, and all the actors are represented on that committee, and on a monthly basis get together to evaluate and see what's going on. So that's where we are. The question of prices, why prices around the country are the same, indeed is because the regulations are such that the pump price is regulated and they are supposed to be the same. Depending, obviously, based upon the regulations, you'll find that inland the price is a little bit different from the coastal areas because it takes into account freight and all the related items, other things that have to happen. So that's the reason why things are like that. To your point, Mr. Chairman, whether a regulated environment or deregulated environment, some of us have operated successfully in regulated environments. Here in South Africa, we're operating here, and we're quite happy. All you need to do is to understand the rules and play according to the rules. And once you understand the rules, there's no problem. In other areas where the market is deregulated, they also have problems. They also have problems. So I guess what I'm saying is this, that I'm quite happy operating in this environment. I take the trouble and the pay and the resources to make sure that I understand the rules. And once you understand the rules and there's predictability, because I know what margin is going to look like. It's unlike if I have to change prices, like in the United States, maybe in some places, four or five times a day. So these are some of the things. There are pros and cons for regulated and deregulated. So we have no problem operating in this country under the present conditions. All we're saying is that let's understand them so that we know how to play. Thank you, sir.
Are there any more questions, members?
I'm sorry, Chairperson, but the Compensation Act is not of the table yet. I'd like to know exactly, Chairperson, which portions or which clauses in the Act that prevents them to coordinate, or there's been trouble if they coordinate, because it seems that they can't coordinate because the Act, when you read this presentation. Now, I'd like to know which sections of the Act that prevents them to supply the industry or to supply SAA or AXA with fuel so that we don't have shortage in the future. And as Dr. Kodak said, what actions in future can you put in place that or short-term solutions so that we know exactly what's the problem? And they said they need stability in the industry and regulation, because this thing is regulated. They cannot play properly. But my argument is that the regulations are consistent for 30 days. They come to Parliament, you pass them, but and the public can comment. They can then, during that stage, when they're consistent, comment on the regulation if they see that it's going to disadvantage them and see if Parliament agrees or but the DOE doesn't agree. So can they just specific which part of the Act that they want the exemption for and how does it impede them to supply? No, regular short, there's no shortage of fuel. And how do they supply the access? Because it seems they don't coordinate. Or when they coordinate, then they are afraid of the Competition Act. Can they just be specific on those questions?
Honorable Sinclair?
I wanted to deal with the issue that the delegation raised in terms of the capacity of the state. What is the real problem in terms of licenses, approval, turnaround time of applications, and so on and so forth? Maybe they can elaborate a bit more on that.
Just before you answer, I want to reiterate again the apology of the minister and the department. They are busy with the SAT plan and they have really sincerely apologized and the committee has accepted the apology. I was at the bare part of the SAT plan of the department yesterday and there was talks about but you can put it in a much better perspective than I can. There was talks about the minister approaching the Minister of Trade and Industry, or the two departments approaching each other regarding your request for the Competition Commission, because there is a bit of a vagueness or a void in terms with the industry and your request. So it's good if you can just shed some light on that. On the other end. You know, we've got smaller airports also around South Africa, which are inland. And yes, some of these refineries have to shut down, some of the inland refineries have to shut down, which they call shut down to clean them up, repaint them, and do maintenance work and that type of thing. Now, I know at one stage there was the refinery, I think it was Moscow, that shut down, or Sasol, one of the two, which they were also a scare about petrol, not just jet fuel, but about petrol in the whole, when one of the refineries shut down. Now, we don't want a re-happening of that again. What guarantee can the industry give us, or this committee, that won't happen where inland people will struggle to get fuel, motor cars, and transport, buses, and other type of things?
Mr. Chairman, again, I'll just touch quickly and then my colleagues will take it further. On the question of fuel around the country, you're right. We have certainly small airports and we have, just to make sure, and smaller places, particularly in the rural areas, far-flung places like those. Certainly, it is our industry and many of our members here would as to that, we constantly have to supply those areas because we have operations in those areas just to make sure that we have fuel around the country. Now, one of the things that we didn't perhaps touch on in this meeting is the fact that we have refineries, and these refineries are like any other facility. After a certain period of time, you have to stop operations to attend to maintenance. Now, if that is not well coordinated, it can create problems. And that is why we coordinate our industry together with the department to ensure that if one refinery is going to go down for maintenance, it's known when it will go down, how long it's going to last, and what contingency plans are in place to make sure that this product flows all the time. And in most instances, you find that the refinery that is going down for a specific period of time for maintenance, then product is then ordered, in other words, from outside of the country to make sure that prior to the shutdown date, to make sure that this product on an ongoing basis we can continue to supply and meet our obligations and towards our customers, etc. And all these things are done in a coordinated fashion so as to make sure that at least we do not, the country does not run dry. So that's one particular specific aspect that we do in order to ensure that there's a constant flow of product on an ongoing basis. Now, that's the one thing, and hopefully I've been able to clarify that. Going back to the other question regarding capacity, yes, we do certainly turnarounds, particularly when it comes to applications for licenses and stuff like that. It does take a while. Our experience now is that I think the department has been able to capacitate itself, so the lead time is shorter than it used to be. It could take, initially, it could take up to 3 months before you could get your licenses back, etc. But however, the time lag has now been shortened, and hopefully as we go on and get, again, we must understand that this is a new process. We all, both parties are learning as to how to operate this. And in some instances, it's not only the question that the turnaround on the other side takes much longer, but it's also on our part sometimes we don't provide the right information that is required in order to make to get the person on the other side to make a quick decision. So it goes both ways, and certainly with time. It's, you know, things are moving in the right direction. When it comes to, again, the question of the Competition Act, I'm going to defer to some of my, I've addressed this thing adequately, and I think beyond that, I don't know, I've ran out of words. But the fact of the matter is that our approach may not be the desired approach, but let me say that there's no red herring. We are in no way trying to circumvent anything, and I believe that it is a good thing for the private sector, for us, to interact with the authorities to get a better understanding so as to save on time and make sure that we understand what's expected of us. So if by doing so we create other impressions, certainly it's unfortunate, but I thought we would want to address that. The question of the other things is where we have to meet our obligations. There's no excuse. We have to meet those obligations without deferring to some other thing. So if my colleagues have anything else to add to that?
If I may, Chair, I just want to try my bit to make members to get a better view and a perspective on this competition exemption issue. It is a long journey, long process that we've embarked on since probably 3 years ago. We, as industry, we actually went to a process of competition compliance audit. We employ law firm to go through all the processes, looking at all the activities that we're participating in. And out of that process, it started like in 2007. And there were recommendations that were made, specifically about those forums or committees that support the collaboration that we have been continuously referring to. Those are the committees that look at the supply of products, looks at the logistics, I mean infrastructure, all the monitoring of stock levels within South Africa or within the industry. And we then started the process of putting the designation together jointly with the then Department of Minerals and Energy. The process of getting a designation, it took us almost a year. We were designated by the Minister of Trade and Industry on the 5th of June 2009. And that designation, it prescribes how should you file your exemption application. There's a specific section that has been quoted or made mention that we need to put our exemption after the DTI has considered our application. They are of their opinion that our application needs to be in terms of section that talks about the promotion of economic stability of the industry. So obviously if the industry is not stable, it affects the economic stability of the country. If we go back to the quote that the chairman has quoted earlier on, that the industry basically is the blood of the economy of South Africa. And that is the approach which then, when the process goes, because the exemption application, it has to be handled by the Competition Commission, not by the DTI. Now we are in the next step where the Competition Commission will evaluate your application to see whether it does contribute towards the economic stability of the petroleum industry in South Africa. The Competition Commission will never exempt you to be involved in conduct or behavior that will promote anti-competitive behavior such as price fixing, market allocation. If that is what you are requesting, you just know that you're not going to get it because they are not set to do that. Their job is to protect interest of me and you, all the consumers in South Africa. And so I can talk about the exemption application for 2 hours, because I've done a presentation on that to my members, and like how we are approaching the whole thing, try to make it sense to even lawyers to understand what we're trying to do. We are not requesting for permission to price fix because we don't fix prices in this industry, even though if we were to give them permission, we won't do that. And you ask a question around how AXA is supplied, how product is supplied to AXA. I thought you mean how is product supplied to the storage tanks there at AXA. It's quite a complicated system. AXA is basically the entity that owns the tanks, the tankage there. The product is owned by 6 oil companies who are part of the consortium which the chairman has referred to earlier on. Then there's a relationship between the oil companies with the airlines, the commercial agreement to supply. But that is why the issue of collaboration is very important, because again the product is supplied by another person, which is Transnet in this case. Transnet, 2 companies are involved in the supply of products to OR Tambo, to those tanks that are holding 46 million liters that we have referred to earlier on. So you have got the product that's coming by rail tankers, you have got the product that's coming from Natref, coming by pipeline, and the product coming from the coastal refineries coming by rail tankers. So already there are so many entities involved there. You've got the airlines, you've got the AXA, you've got the oil companies, you've got Transnet companies. Hence, if one of these players is just doing its planning on its own, you eventually end up in a situation where we were just a month ago. And our main reason for seeking an exemption is to be allowed to be able to talk for planning purpose to ensure that we optimize the digitalization of logistical infrastructure. Nothing more than that. That's what we are requesting. Again, the Competition Commission will have to evaluate the reasons that we are advancing, whether they promote what we have been designated for.
If I can just maybe add something to maybe, you know, assist the member maybe more. Currently, as my colleague has said, we're not allowed to discuss among these members about volumes of stock at our depots. So if we use an example, let's say a depot like Alberton Run is dry, i.e. I'm out of stock of MoGas 95, which I supply to my customers. In the past, before the Commission Act, you could have a meeting as Indians and say, listen, where do you have stock, BP or India, can you supply me? And that would be quite okay, because the previously there wasn't a designation that says you can't do that. Right now, we can't do that as an industry because the commissioner, and they're quite right in the assertion, might think that if I talk to my competitors to manage supply in an area, it could be detrimental to consumers in the area. So what may happen is we may short supply an area like in Mpumalanga, like Witbank, for instance, and don't supply it with fuel. No supply means you can push up your price. So supply of shortage of product means you push up the demand, the price goes up. And you could create an industry to do that. That is why right now we're not allowed to do that as an industry. We can only do it under if the Competition Commission okay this. We are applying for the designation mainly to manage and coordinate supply problems where it affects an area as a whole. Not Shell only or BP only. It affects the supply by the oil companies, by Transnet, and whoever owns the tanks, and government, the government body that's involved. And in order for us to talk in a forum, in an industry, like a meeting like this, only the Competition Commissioner can okay that under the current regulation. So that's why we've applied for that over, you know, and just an example that I wanted to give you. So it's just to discuss and coordinate supply logistics for certain of our areas. And that's all we can be applying for. Other than that, you know, because, you know, Sapir obviously fiercely maintain that free market economy in terms of marketing a product must still be in place. So there's a consumer at the end of the day get the best price. I mean, in essence, I mean, somebody made the point why, you know, the price is the same. I mean, so all that you can, you know, that you can do as an oil company is compete on service, because government sets the prices at the pump anyway. But what we want to prevent is for other products, you know, there's not control. There's no collusion among industry members. And there, the Competition Commissioner guards it very fiercely. So we can't even talk about the supply, let's say, of bitumen or lubricants. You're not allowed to do that. If you do that, you have to fine, you could lose your license to trade. It's only for petrol and diesel and paraffin as well, other fine. Those three. That's all we'll be applying for in terms of a government dispensation, in terms of the regulations that we are allowed to, and nothing else. And obviously what we're using is security of supply, because, you know, it's quite clear. Housing, especially the economic housing of the country, there's a supply shortage. We're actually lucky right now that there's an off-take in demand. The demand has tapered off. If we were growing the economy and demand has grown, there would have even been more urgent need to collaborate more intensely to make sure there's no shortages anywhere in the country. Because what do you do if you got no supply in one area and you've got a mine, a hospital, and a factory that needs supply? We're going to decide that. All this will be just, you know, we're doing it in a protocol exercise with the government, with Power of Energy and other state players, to make sure that there's a protocol in place. If there's a supply shortage, who gets first pick in the chair? What happens to our partners across the border, Botswana, Namibia, and other SADC members? And only the CC can give us that, okay, you know, to do that discussion like that in a broad context. And that is what we're applying for. So hopefully that gives you some level of comfort that we're not trying to collude. I mean, as you know, some of us have paid hefty fines in Europe, some of our companies, in recent years.
Can I just bring it back to the question at hand in terms of what happened at Owatambo in relation to what the gentleman has just said just now? If you look at the sequence of events, you've got a situation where you cannot talk about volume, and you've got a situation where volumes are being depleted at the same time. So the collaboration that we're talking about is in terms of coming together and saying, who's got stocks where and how are we going to help each other in the situation. So if I'm sitting at Total and we've got a shutdown and I can say that we've got a little bit of stock and we're sure that the stock will cover our customers, I don't have a global view of what is happening with Chevron or what is happening with BP or what is happening with the other members in terms of that. If they don't come to me and they say to me that they need stock, I can't discuss their stock level with them. It's only when the problem escalated at a higher level that we all found the global view. But as the problem is building up, we don't have the global view of the extent of the problem. And that is where we're talking about the collaboration.
If I understand it correctly, this collaboration will, in actual fact, be a bonus or a plus. For argument's sake, if you have a pump or filling station in deep far in Limpopo, in the Gali village, you haven't got stock, or your stock is going to run out. But now, the refinery set, or the depot, for argument's sake, says, can deliver in about a week's time. But the next depot that are on their way through the Gali village to the farthest end have stock and their truck will be able to leave the depot tomorrow. So that's why you went to ask the Competition Commission now if that truck then can also load fuel for the filling station in the Gali village and upload there. Am I understanding it correctly? A collaboration.
In principle, that is what the collaboration is supposed to be about.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, as the gentleman has pointed out, that there should be firewalls, so to speak, in terms of making sure that there is no collusion to causing areas to be out of stock to the extent that we end up pushing our price.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a valid concern from the Competition Commission, and we're not questioning that at all.
Quite just an enlightenment. Firewalls and petroleum are two dangerous issues. Mr. Steed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe just two things that I don't think have been answered clearly. And the one was, what are our solutions for the 2010 World Cup to make sure that that is going to happen properly? And I think what you've heard from the discussion, we've gone straight into the need for this talking and planning on a day-to-day basis so that the problems don't get out of hand. Other than that, and maybe we haven't alluded to it, there's very little that can be done within the 200 and, 80, 90 days left in way of hardware, in the way of getting more yellow belly jet rail tank cars onto our rail system, in terms of getting more locos onto our system, in terms of getting reliability of the rail system up. There's nothing we can do about the pipeline. There's a new pipeline that's being built from Durban to Johannesburg. So the net of all that, it's a very constrained system that is supplying ORT. And without within the precinct of ORT, AXA are building additional tanks, a process that started some time back. But there's very little else that can be done with the main arteries that feed into that area, and hence our need. And maybe I appreciate the honourable member's continued pressure as to why we after this exemption. But really, that's the only real means that we've got to make a success out of the World Cup. But and certainly, I think with the right communication bodies and sort of controls over the process, we can achieve that. In the absence of that, we've got the problems that we've seen just now at the back end of the Confederation Cup, and I'm not 100% sure of numbers, so nobody take these as fact, but I think in terms of the visitors over this last period, there may well have been 50,000 or that sort of number of people. From what we understand from the local organizing committee is that we're looking at that number being in the order of 450,000 to 500,000 for the World Cup. And that's really what's worrying us and why we want to see this exemption for us to talk and plan. And I guess and that's why we respect what's been done by the minister to put the task team together. Thank you.
Members, this will be our last round of questions. Honourable Sinclair.
Okay, I'm again back at the issue about the capacity within government, because if it takes 3 months, I think it's quite a relative short time. To say that government processes hamper development and increases costs when it takes 3 months, it just can't be. So I think there's one element of the answer that's not coming up in terms of the efficiency of government. Maybe the industry must respond to that.
Thank you, Chair. Can we assume that the industry is in constant discussion with the airlines? Because it's not a question only of big aircraft flying in with some tourists and at the end of the World Cup flying them out again. There will be tremendous air traffic all over South Africa during that period, because people might be staying in Cape Town, or tourists, or the people who come in to watch the games are staying in Cape Town, but they want to see a game in Nelspruit or in Durban, and the aircraft flies them up, and after the game flies them back again. I've even been told that an airport like, Nelspruit does not have parking facilities for all the aircraft there, so that they will fly in, say, from Cape Town to Nelspruit, drop the passengers, fly out to an airport like Maputo, park it there for the day, and fly empty back again to Nelspruit to pick up their passengers. So, as I said, the air traffic will increase tremendously over that period, and I assume that you will be in touch, or you are in touch with the company. Thank you.
I've now been quiet for a long time, and it really puzzles me. It worries me too. You see, I've been sitting waiting for the cards to come onto the table. And Honourable Ngunu persisted till he got there, and Dr. Conroy is milking, but he's circling to get the information out. And now finally we're talking about logistics. And what is really going to happen in 2010. And then Mr. Steed is saying that we can't increase the supply capacity in South Africa. So, okay, now we're sitting with all the cards on the table. And then if they can collaborate, it's going to sort out all the problems. Is this not a case of Hoga Mark for Baba Bang, and we're going to pay a lot for petrol and fuel next year, and prices will go up incredibly? I still can't get the whole thing together, and you understand what I'm saying? Thank you. I'm suspicious.
Any more members? Honourable Mr. Matisse.
Yes, Chairperson. Let me say that we have heard the presentation. And for now, the response has been that the subject members are meeting in order to be able to regulate their operations, and that they have formed this particular committee with the assistance of the minister and the competition board in order to ensure that there is no interruption of flow of fuel. So for now, that is the reason that we have. Being given. So let's accept the reason for now. But obviously, if we want to pry further, we can call the competition board and so on. But for the time being, I think on their part, they have tried their best to make presentations. We can have the case rest, and then the next time we call them, we'll be calling them on their plans on 2010, just to ensure that there are no technical hitches, and that Transnet is not on strike, or the trains have stuck, and that the refineries have not all been being refurbished, you know, during the period of 2010 and so on. So for now, I think we can. He uses the term ceasefire.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying, but you know, it's also that we need to make all members happy in the committee, and members should not go out of the committee still unanswered. I've just got two questions. You know, well, it seems to me in that corner, that's where most of the petrol is, and where we should build the firewall. You know, the industry itself, if you talk to members of the industry, they've got this major problem in terms of, I know there's a revamping of filling stations, and I don't know if this is Sophia Terrain or Petro SA or certain sections of the industry itself. Now, for an owner to have a filling station, and this filling station are being revamped, it needs to make an application again. And sometimes the industry just refused it. I know of a guy in my constituency where it was just said to him, sorry, but you're not going to get the license. Someone, the industry has said someone else will get the license. Now, this man, his livelihood is in the garage. In the filling station, he has been there all the time, he's been known in the community, he's been known for good service. Also, the other thing is, with this new way that the industry is taking of having this convenience stores, you find out that these convenience stores are sometimes pricing you out the market. I know BP and Pick and Pay has got this agreement, Engen and Woolworths have got this agreement, you know. Total and Labotito, is it correct? Has got this agreement. Shell and not Magen Bean, but the Bean Company, or what is this? Convenience stores has got this agreement. But sometimes these convenience stores are not so convenient, specifically when they are in historically disadvantaged areas. They are not so convenient. Now, some of the owners are complaining. They say, but we have been forced by the industry to adapt or to switch over to these convenience stores. But we are losing money because the profit margin on the petrol is not that heavy. It's not that much. That, I mean, you can put R1 million in your pocket for a week or something. It covers, some of them are saying it barely covers the overhead costs, the staff expenses and all that. Now, is there a way that we can look at that convenience in terms of, I know, prices and in terms of, in areas that are really, really poor, in changing these old stores into convenience stores? Because the guys are saying that in the rural areas, for argument's sake, it is a major problem, these convenience stores. They felt that the old stores were better equipped, because there, the guy can still wiggle with his price. If he gets sugar cheaper at Winners or Champs or Boxer than by Macro, then he'll buy the sugar at Boxer and sell it at a reduced price to the community. But now the convenience stores, the prices are fixed by these companies.
Chairman, let me try and take a step, and I'm going to leave it to the experts here to deal with these things, who deal with those matters on a day-to-day basis. But in my experience, you're right in that certainly in some other parts of the country, you may want to change and just to adapt your operations to meet the needs of the people on the ground. And it's very difficult to speak in general terms, because various companies have various agreements with their customers and so on, so it becomes a little difficult to generalize. But let me speak specifically using our company, my own company, as a reference point. Maybe that would be a little bit more useful. We have as a branded convenience store. It becomes sometimes very difficult to do so. And you're correct in that once you go into these franchise agreements, the cost may be too high for an area which certainly doesn't generate that sort of capital, cash on an ongoing basis, and that has the potential of really of getting the dealer out of business because he can't meet all those requirements. And that is why, in our particular case, we, in some instances, we have a stripped down, if you will, type of convenience store, which means that the individual is not bound by the franchise agreement, which stipulates in clear terms what you can sell out of that. In other words, it gives the dealer the opportunity to see what may be relevant to that community and be able to stock product that can be sold quickly and is relevant and the people would like to, you know, would be happy to do it. So those are some of the things, and I think you will find that these are named differently. You might find one is called shop, which may be an idea to distinguish that from the fully fledged, convenient, branded outlet. In that way, it helps in the sense that the individual within that particular area is able to sell what they need. Your point is a very valid one, and I can recall many years ago when Kentucky Fried Chicken arrived, started to trade in this country. There was a man in Limpopo who got the franchise and continued to sell Kentucky Fried Chicken as per the menu and everything else, etc. And one of the things that he did, which any entrepreneur would do, he identified that if he sold Kentucky Fried Chicken with pub, it would certainly go, and his sales were rising. Mm. And of course, the company came around and they said, no, but according to the franchise agreement, you're not supposed to sell pub out of this outlet. And there was problem. So, again, one needs to make sure that you become sensitive and aware of these things. That is why, as I say, I can't generalize, but in my own company, there are those other facilities where we let the dealer run with it because it's more profitable and it makes sense to the dealer to do so rather than impose a branded convenience retail or on the person.
There are still some more questions. A few questions will be answered.
Indirectly, yes. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Sinclair, have your question been answered? Your question was on the capacity building within government, am I correct? Can anybody answer? And Honourable Van Lingen's question was still not been answered. The guarantee that you want that we won't run dry in 2010. Was that the question? The capacity building within government. I know that they were discussing that during the strategic planning because what happened was that there's two departments, but still one overarching, how can I say it?
Not ministries.
There's two ministries, there's one department, one budget. So there is a lot of, I was saying it yesterday at the strategic planning, there's a lot of actors in energy at the moment. Because everybody's acting, from the director general are acting down to the DDGs are acting and all that. So I'm not answering on behalf of the department or on behalf of Sophia, Honorable Sinclair, but I had the privilege of attending the Strathclyde yesterday for the day. So they are still busy, and I think that will only happen after the 1st of October, when the department has got their budget, and then they can start employing people, and then they can build the capacity within government and within the departments. According to the acting DG, she has briefed the industry on that. So that's the I think the bottleneck that is in the department, or the hampering situation that's in the department at the moment. Because minerals and mineral resources are at the moment now the host department for minerals and energy, or for energy. Mineral resources are now hosting energy to say, listen, we'll carry you. So I don't know if that maybe clear up some light on the roof and clear that. But in actual fact, we will have a briefing session with the department in terms of the strategic plans, and then they we'll park that question of yours for that time, and then they can. The Honourable Van Lingen, your question, the guarantee, ladies and gentlemen from the industry, give us some. Markles gives you a 2-year guarantee. I mean, the industry can at least give us a guarantee.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. What we have been trying to do, we have been demonstrating how we are trying to assure that there's no supply disruption. If it happens, how are we able to respond? It's very difficult when you run a system. Everything is stretched out. The pipeline is full. You still have got 100 trucks on the road because the pipeline is full. Then you look at your refineries, you are running them flat out. So everything is running like to the extreme. And it's very difficult to guarantee that there won't be any supply disruption. But the thing is, like, if it happens, how ready are you to respond? That is the big challenge. Hence, we are talking about the exemption and exemption, because once we've got that, we know how to respond in a better way, because you can't guarantee that there will be no supply disruption. What is your plan if it happens? That's the most important thing.
Also to add on to that, like I said, once again, I'm not a representative of the department. I've got oversight function over the department, but I think it will also be justifiable for me of what I've heard to share with the committee. It's also one thing that the department has said, that there's a task team that has been appointed by the minister to specifically look at 2010. If you see in your briefing notes, that task team is to specifically look at the jet fuel shortage, and not just the jet fuel shortage, but at all fuel, the whole of the industry, leading up to 2010, and not just 2010, but beyond. And that task team meets regularly. I've been briefed by the DG yesterday. They meet regularly. I think they are meeting today as well, and in Pretoria. So that task team meets regularly to keep the department and the minister up to date. But also, that the job of that task team, if they see any red light or danger, that's to immediately notify the industry. Not wait till the last moment, but immediately to notify the industry. I think what we need to do somewhere down the line, and we'll also have to call the task team to come and explain their readiness and what they see to us. Honorable Van Lingen, does that satisfy you a little bit? Or?
And the wording, Honorable Chair, of the exemption?
The wording of the exemption. Well, you see, also, after the meeting with the minister, the two ministers in the department, of Trade and Industry at a Competition Commission, as well as the Minister of Energy, I think we will just have to call them to come and explain that exemption to us. If the exemption has been granted, what conditions? If the exemption has not been granted, why? Why was the exemption not been granted? Can we park that? As Honorable Matisi said, can we call the ceasefire now on that, Honorable Van Lingen? Okay, great stuff. Let me take this opportunity of thanking Sophia, Mr. Siotladi, am I correct now this time?
Yeah.
Mr. Tifolaro, Mr. Steed, Mr. Jaeger, am I correct?
Correct.
In pronouncing it? Ms. Mekwa, Mr. Collier, is it Collier? Yeah. Mr. Collier. Mabula, Mr. Mabula from Petro SA. Please extend our thanks for availing yourself to address this committee. You know, there is this thing that I always believe in peace. I'm not a person of hostility and all that, you know. But someone was saying to me yesterday, but what happened if these guys don't come? Then you must subpoena. I said, no, before subpoena, let's talk. That's the whole thing. So thank you very much, and we want to wish the industry well, and also in your endeavors in trying to keep us afloat. You know what happened yesterday at OR Tambo, just before takeoff, the pilot, they were allowing more people on the plane, and then the pilot realized that we won't have enough fuel because of the baggage and because of the more people that they were on, and then had to get 500, and I don't know, they measure fuel on an airplane in kilograms.
Yeah.
I was quite astounded. I said to this senior cabin crew member, is that liters? Or? He said, no, sir, it's kilograms, because we take the fuel by the weight. And we had to wait another, luckily, they didn't have to wait for the competition commission collaboration. there was a tanker nearby. They could have just called the tanker and we could load extra 500 kilograms of fuel within 10 minutes and off we went. But once again, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and members of the committee. Thank you very much, and we hope to see each other next week when we have a committee meeting again. Next week, Tuesday, am I right, Greg? Yeah, next week, Tuesday. Thanks to the staff as well of the committee and to the media and... thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of your day. Enjoy your week, and let's make it work. Thank you. Oh, members of the committee, can you just please remain just for 2 minutes, please? Members of the committee. Members of the committee, we members, we don't want to waste any time because Honorable Nyambi and myself have to rush to another meeting now. But you know the oversight visit that we intend taking on the 7th, the 15th, or the 16th to the 18th of September to the Northern Cape. Apparently that's not possible. I spoke to the chief of yesterday, and she said that there is a question to, I think it's the deputy president or minister, that is happening on the 17th of September, and then there's a three-line whoop as it is this afternoon. So that's not possible. Now, the request was that we should do it then rather in constituency period, but I don't think that is possible because there's a whole lot of workings and going around, specifically in the opposition circles. We are meeting on a daily basis to have this broad opposition, but be that as it may,
the competition board.
That's not possible. So we need to look at the dates. We need to look at a date that is feasible and possible to do this. If you will allow us, the secretariat and myself, to look at some dates and confer with you before we make the application to go on this oversight visit. You see, it is necessary that we do this, tackle this, because De Beers has now decided, what I've read in yesterday's Cape Times, or someone phoned me to say, by the Cape Times, one of the journalists of the Cape Times phoned to say, by the Cape Times on Monday, there's an article on De Beers. De Beers has now given 463 million to Claim C to tackle some of the issues that the residents have raised. But we need to go out. You know, I've met the Director General of Mineral Resources. We need to go out and see, because it's good to give that money. But when they made applications for the license, there was a social and labor plan that had to be adhered to. Now, we need to go out and see whether that social and labor plan has been adhered to. Because in the license application, they need every mining agency, every mining house, whether it's small-scale mining, whether it's big-scale mining, need to make that application to say that we are going to build so much schools, we're going to sustain so much hospitals, or we're going to do that, and there won't be job losses, and that is in all mining applications. Now, we need to go look and find out whether this, what the DG has given us, someone, I just forget the name, in my office, that will help us at the department to look at these things. They are also prepared to come before the committee, but I think we just need to do our oversight first and then call these people to the committee and then call the department. Say, you know, because these are private companies as well. So if that is the story I want to bring back to the secretariat and myself, if the members will agree, we'll look at the date and then confer with you, and then we'll do the application. Honourable Sinclair?
In the local paper in Kimberley, the DSA, there was a little article yesterday about the situation, and I just made copies for the members to look at it, if you allow me to distribute. Yeah. Okay. No, it's fine. I heard about the beers, 463 million, you know, but the problem with some of these people, and I'm not specifying the beers, is they give you the one end and they take with the other, you know. And you're right to say that the answer lies in what does the social labor plan say. Now, it's very easy to donate 500 million rand to say we're going to do this and this and the other, but aren't they supposed to engage in a billion rand activity? You know, that is a critical question.
You know, members, honourable secretary, sorry, because it's not happening just in the Northern Cape. You know where the biggest culprits are located? It's in Limpopo. Limpopo is one of the provinces where these, but not just big mining companies. We're talking about small mining companies, small scale mining companies as well. They need to produce social and labour plans, and these small mining companies have now got billions of rands, and communities are suffering now. Now that, for me, I mean, we represent provinces. That for me really is not. We will widen the application, in actual fact. Because there was an outcry from the department to say, but please, help us, take our hands, because these companies are saying, but hey, you have granted us the license, and what's your problem? But Parliament, please help us in taking our hands. And because if these companies see that it's not the department on the neck, but Parliament on the neck as well, then they will definitely get back. So we will widen our oversight visit, including, I know it will be, logistically it will be a bit difficult, but we should include Limpopo as well, because there, it's a small-scale mining. Also in the Northern Cape, I believe there's small-scale miners that this says, no, Never mind the social and legal plan. We've got the license. We'll carry on. We'll carry on as if no one can touch us. Well, the committee decided that the two of us, or the secretariat and the chairperson, will have to look at the date and then confer with the committee members and then to make that necessary. I think if the two of us can leave tomorrow morning, we need the program in committee tomorrow. We will have a new program then, and then we will just after program in committee. Or before program in committee. They normally send it out today after the multi-party works meet. And get us a new program. Okay. Members, thank you. The meeting stands adjourned. Thank you very much for your attention.